Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respects to the elders past and present, and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening today.
Welcome to The Gays Are Revolting, a definitive weekly news source for contemporary gays.
They put the G in LGBTQIA+, and they're here to help you be the best G you can be.
You can follow the boys on Instagram at Gays Are Revolting Pod, or join their Facebook group at The Gays Are Revolting.
Access their weekly after show at the patreon.com/gaysrevoltingpod, and be sure to rate and review their wonderful show on the Apple Podcast app.
Hello.
Hello, mothers. Hi, how are you?
Hi, boys. Hello, boys.
We're so excited to have you here. Yes. Our listeners are also very excited. They've sent us some questions for you. We're going to grill you.
No. Grill away. Effie and I are happy to be here, and we're holding hands.
But before we do, of course, we do open every episode with reads.
With a little read, yes.
So we're going to read our mums today. Mm-hmm. So my name's Thomas Jaspers, and we are joined by my mum, Rose, who saw in the U2000 New Year's Eve by skinny dipping on Aspendale Beach in front of her in-laws, her own parents, her children, and most of her extended family. Hi, Mum!
Hi. A little bit of a contradiction in terms, skinny dipping.
And my name is Mikey, and we are joined by my mum, Effie, who, like a nice bottle of red, ages well with time.
Stop it, Mikey.
Are we rating, like, you as sons and us as mums? Because so far, Mikey's winning, and I'm pretty sure he's ahead of the game.
Mikey's always good at, like, the nice read.
Yeah. I'm horrible at a, like, sassy read.
Yeah.
Not
into
he just thinks he's the
We're so thrilled to have both of you here. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Now, Effie, you've listened to the podcast before, haven't you?
Yes.
And what do you reckon?
What do you think?
It's hilarious, mate.
Yeah?
You guys are so funny. You all get along well.
Yeah, we do, which is nice. Yeah. And, Mum, I told you ages ago not to listen to it, and I thought you secretly were, but you just told us over dinner that you actually weren't.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a technical thing. I have trouble with podcasts and getting the ones that I want. No, I was obedient at first, but I have followed it.
You were listening to the Sydney Gays instead.
Yeah, probably. I have followed it on digital stuff, right. But actually listening. So that looks really good. And I've heard your granny.
Yeah,
Granny Bingo podcast.
That was easy because someone gave me the link and I just had to cut and paste it in my brain.
Well, I'll give you the link for this episode.
Yeah, that'd be good. I can share with my friends.
So this episode, we're just going to go through and ask our mum some questions that people have sent in.
Yeah,
and
some of them are ones that we
sort of had a chat.
We realized some stuff that we've never. I mean, we both have good relationships with our mums, but there's stuff that we never really have thought to ask since we've become adults.
That's it.
And then there's also some stuff that people have written in that they're keen to know from a mother and gay son perspective. So. Should we get into it?
Let's do it.
So, Mum, Rose, yeah. We're going to start by interrogating you first. Mm. You're the lucky first. I was born, I'm older than Mikey. I went first, so you get to go first. So we're going to start with probably the question that we received the most from listeners, but also one that I was most excited to ask you when we came up with the idea for this episode. I've told my coming out story so many times, but I've never really heard it from your perspective. Mm. If I wasn't here, so if we're just in a so you're at work or whatever, and someone said, oh, Rose, your son's gay, how did he come out? Mm. What is your version of that story?
Yeah. So I don't really remember you.
Oh, that's a good start to the podcast.
No. Are you gay? Oh, fuck, I was here under false pretenses. Oh, no. So to me, the obvious public coming out story was your first comedy festival.
Oh, yeah.
What was it called? I remember it was at the Horse
It was
Bazaar.
Always
the Bridesmaid, Never the Bride.
No, that was my third one. No Place Like Homo.
So that was kind of like the official it's out there coming out for you. But I remember having a chat with you. It's about sexuality and what you might identify to be or whatever. And you said, well, if it's important, I'm bisexual. And I don't know if I said it out loud or it was just a loud thought in my head like, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll let you have that for a little while. It might be easier. It was totally natural because, like, the other bootstrap we can get on with life. And I think there was, like, are you going to tell Grandma and Granny? Yeah, I'll tell them. I can't even remember if I told Dad
I think
or you
I
told
asked,
him.
I asked you to tell him. Yeah, I was too scared. Yeah.
So it was just locally out and about, I suppose. Yeah. And then your coming out story was the official
at the
comedy festival really, because that's when our...
Extended.
It's actually when it gave permission, particularly for Tony. It was really quite difficult for Tony with you coming out. So that was kind of like his official platform to go, it's okay. We've survived this and everybody knows. And I think you were really clever with that because the story was obviously about your coming out. It was hilarious and mostly true. And you very much painted Tony as the hero. And all our friends were really excited because Tom's having his first gig at the comedy festival. This is a big deal. Yeah. And we had a huge group of friends going, like huge, and some relatives. And everyone was really positive about it. But I know Tony had this seething fear of like, oh, what's going to happen? Something bad must happen because I've always learned that this is a bad thing. Mm. Even though I don't believe it in my heart, I have this feeling. Right, so we get there and he's like really edgy and the show's about to start. He says, I've got to go and put money in the meter. And I was angry.
Yeah, you're like, what are you doing? Like, what?
You better be in here on time. I'm going to kill you. And he's sort of slouched down in his chair. And then as this story evolves and Tony becomes more and more the hero of it, he's like sitting up. And looking around, and then the show was over, and it was like, well, everybody, who's coming to the pub? Drinks are on me.
He literally invited the entire theatre to a pub and bought drinks for everybody at the pub. It was so cute.
Amazing. I mean, there was still a ways to go after that, but was so clever.
I think by that point,
clever.
He'd sort of come to terms because I think I was 22 or 23.
I think the last.
I'd come out at 17, and that was,
Yeah, and that was the last bastion for him, was like really being open with his friends about it. So.
So you mentioned you knew before the time I came out that obviously I was gay. How early did you know or did you start wondering?
Oh, it was always obvious. So do you remember the yellow halter-neck gown with the feathers on it?
Yes, I do.
Stand in front of the fan with the microphone and sing ABBA songs?
Yeah.
It was probably...
Voted off the neighbours.
And I remember in prep when you had... you did the chicken dance?
Yeah.
All the prep babies had to get there early and put their makeup on and you were so beautiful. And as you walked out, Mary, our best friend, was like, oh my God, Rosie's beautiful. I was like, yeah, right?
Yeah.
But it was always on the cards, but I also never assumed that was the case.
Yeah.
Like I still felt that there was a time when you had the right to tell me about it.
But then by the time I was hanging out with like my best friend very often and lots of sleepovers and that sort of stuff.
So it was very cute. My friends, Mary being one of them who I just spoke about, when you were probably about 15, they had a little intervention.
Yeah.
And they all came around for morning tea and they said, now, Rose, we've got to talk to you. Have you really thought about the fact that Tom could be gay?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, you guys are so sweet. Yeah. I can't believe you did that.
Yeah.
And we just laughed and drank and then talked about something else. So that was that.
But and drank at morning tea, so you can see where
I love
I get
that. Yeah.
And then from, because we've got three boys and Tom's the oldest, and obviously Tony's very nervous, and we sometimes talked about it, sometimes not. So he set down the ground rules. Not allowed to have partners having sleepovers.
Mm.
And I said, well, you be very careful with that rule because whatever you say now, you have to do it. Oh, it's got nothing to do with that. And so Tom used to have lots of friends sleeping over, lots of girls. And Robbie, who is fairly different on that respect, he's, you know, the quintessential tradie. He was like, fuck, I'm going to be gay in the next life. And woke up and then it goes into Tom's room. He's in bed with three women.
Were you allowed to have people sleep over?
Yeah, all the time. Mm. I feel like...
Partners?
Partners in my, like, later teens.
Yeah, later teens.
Yeah, but no, it was... Older.
And was that the same rule for everyone?
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. I always had like all my girlfriends stay over, and I was always allowed to go stay at my girlfriend's places before I had come out. Mm. And like, I think all the parents just sort of knew.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, but I wasn't at a point yet where I was ready to accept it.
That's right.
And that's what I always tried to keep an open mind, but I would have been really surprised if he wasn't gay.
Mm. Yeah.
I didn't want to make the call, but.
Yeah.
So, and I think that was one of the things that probably caused angst between Tony and I was like, I didn't like that. Before having kids, I didn't know, because I was very Catholic, you didn't have people sleeping over. Mm. And we were talking about partners for this rule. Mm. And I didn't know what that would look like in the future for me. But then you add this other red herring that actually the first one's going to be a gay partner, most likely.
Yeah.
That was an issue for me. It was just getting my head around, do people sleep over these days? Do you actually have sex before marriage? No, it doesn't matter actually for him, because he can't get married. No. And that was something that we had an underlying, never resolved problem with Tony and I.
That sort of leads me to my next question, which is about concern. So life as a gay man for someone my age now is incredibly different to someone who was my age when you were my age. Mm. What concerns did you have about my life once you had realised, either pre or post me coming out? And did you ask anyone for advice when you knew that I was gay, or when you started suspecting that I might be gay?
I don't recall ever asking anybody for advice, really. I don't know. I think with all the kids, no matter what, we've just embraced if it makes you happy and it doesn't hurt people, it's not illegal, which you could put an argument together for that
was for some people. Depending what time it was,
What do you need advice for that for? Yeah. I was really excited for you that's it, cool, it's out there, let's move on now.
Yeah.
But I did worry that life was going to be hard.
Yeah.
That there's just associated to that, there's difficult things. I didn't know what they were.
Yeah. I mean, I was born in 1986, which is obviously the height of the AIDS epidemic. Has that ever been something that's been a huge concern for you?
Should have been, shouldn't it? But no.
I don't know. There's no rule. Yeah. I know that a lot of parents talk about, especially parents that had kids around that period of time.
I remember having a talk to you actually about safe sex, and you were like, oh, it's not fair and everything else. And I said, actually, you're luckier than heterosexual people who can pretend that that's not a problem.
Mm, true.
And it's just as bad a problem for them. At least you're more informed.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think if you can separate from your family and go to a STD clinic in non-English speaking European countries.
Mum did take me to an STD or to a doctor to find a cure for syphilis, I think it was, in rural France.
Gonorrhea, I thought.
Or maybe, anyway. I don't know.
Whatever, they're all the same.
Oh, yeah, I've collected gonorrhea, the whole
set. AIDS, like whatever. Pokemon, whatever. You know. So obviously the homophobic thing was the big one. Mm. How do you grow up what's society going to be like? It was changing already then, so I had an optimistic view that it should be okay. I didn't envisage that he'd be such a leader in that area, which just like, oh, what a proud mummy I am. Mm. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. I'll tear up. I fortunately never really had been exposed to the horrible homophobia either. I had I was lucky from that respect, but I was aware it was there. And you couldn't get married then.
I mean,
it was totally different to now, really. Mm. Still got a long way to go, I agree. But so just those things of like, oh, you have a partner, you can't recognise that, you know, you aren't going to have to suffer like the rest of us and be committed for be in a different tax bracket, all that kind of thing. Yeah, so I just didn't know how fair life was going to be for him. I think it's actually working out pretty well. I didn't realise that it already had been pretty hard for him. I thought he got through pretty lightly until he started talking about it when he was older.
Now, you touched on Dad, and we'll talk about Dad a little bit more in a sec, but Grandma has always been an amazing supporter of me and my life. She's a lot of my friends aren't even out to their grandparents, or at least don't talk about it with their grandparents. Grandma, you bring her to a lot of my drag shows and a lot of my comedy festival shows and that sort of stuff. We've been on wonderful holidays where she's come to gay bars with us and that sort of thing. Mm. She's always been a huge supporter of me. How did she react when she found out and when you told her?
Pretty much like, well, that's of course, yes. Stop with the kettle on now.
Of course.
Is that it? Yeah. Why are you telling me this?
Yeah.
I think I told her and Dad together. Yeah. My dad's really interesting because he's not going to be listening to this, so I can say that. He's turned into the quintessential grumpy old man. He's the king of them. and he was a convert to Catholicism, so they're the worst. They're like really Catholic. So he was fantastic. He just said, well, I don't agree with it, but Yeah, he just said, but it's still Tom, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It
was just like, I would say he's come even further since then. I mean, he's met my partners.
I remember when he said to you, not that you've had a huge long string of partners.
Three serious partners. Yeah. Three that they've met.
Okay. And he pulled you aside the next day and he said, oh, Tom, I just have to tell you, I really like your friend. Yeah. And that was kind of like embracing that. Yeah. I know you do the dirty and that's okay because I like him.
Because I like him. It's all good.
I think when I went out with Josh, he was kind of excited that he could see him on the TV. And
that actually
about
that. That was before the coming out story, wasn't it?
Was before the
but that also was good for Tony because of, like, his devotion to celebrity to them.
In a way, it was actually good for our relationship because it wasn't sort of a deep, dark secret that you don't tell people. He could go to work and say, oh, you know that guy that's on that show? Well, that's my son's boyfriend. So there's nothing, you know, that's got to be a good thing.
And I don't know that he actually did that until people started saying to him, oh, my God, your son's dating Josh Thomas. Right. He'd be like, yep, and waiting for that boot to drop and nothing happened. Mm-hmm. It was okay. Mm-hmm. So
and
yeah,
I think
can talk about it more.
Sammy, my partner after that, they were actually incredibly close. And that was really good for him to realize that you can have a close-knit family relationship with the same-sex partner of your child. Mm. I think that was hugely beneficial for him. Mm. So he did have some major issues with homosexuality prior to me coming out. And I would say, at least from what I know, mostly due to his upbringing, he was in a very big Catholic, very poor family. His dad was an illegal immigrant and his mum was an orphan, basically, and they lived off very little money for most of their lives. And as many people from that socioeconomic background in the Catholic Church were, they were devout Catholics and believed the Bible.
Unconditionally.
Unconditionally.
Yeah.
So he obviously had some huge issues when I came out, but he's worked so hard to overcome those now. I would say we're closer than we ever have been at this point now in our lives. But what was it like for you when he and I were at loggerheads? Like, I feel like prior to me coming out, we were
really
fighting a lot.
Yeah. I don't think, that's the thing. It was more of an undertone. I don't think you fought at all, probably. And he never did about anything because probably fighting was bad too.
Yes, true, yeah.
And it was really hard because
we didn't get each other.
You didn't fight, but you didn't get each other. And he had these really strong opinions and he could just turn off and go, no, it's not like that. We both lived in the same home where I wanted my home to be really welcoming and you bring whoever you want, whatever you want, until I say no. How dare you be saying no? Yeah. I'm the boss of this.
Yeah.
I think I was quite angry at him and quite, this isn't fair, this is wrong and it's your fault. And it wasn't until probably I came to the realization that, holy shit, you've got it harder than me. You know, I didn't have to battle with demons. I didn't have a fear of this. I didn't have a fear of something that I absolutely adore. How do you balance that? How do you work through that? So massive amount of huge respect and it still wasn't resolvable at that stage when I just came to that realization, but it made it a lot easier to believe that we would go through a process and it would be okay.
I mean, as a kid, I remember thinking, oh, Dad likes Robbie better than me.
Oh, really?
That's how I remember it at the time.
Wow.
Which obviously now as an adult I know is not true, but it was really, it was a given. It was just a given that's
as an adult,
Mum loves
that,
us all and Dad loves Robbie better than me because I'm different.
I didn't see that, but now that you say it, it's totally obvious to me. Mm. But from my perspective, I didn't see it because you probably didn't see that along with, I'm terrified I've got a gay son, I've been a bad parent, was I'm a terrible parent, my kids are all losers.
It was him hating himself.
Tom's gay and Robbie's a drinker and God knows what Declan's going to be. So although you had that obvious stigma that was a trigger to all of that, it actually was about him being a bad person. He could actually in his mind at times make that or be about the kids all being really bad. But that was at the very...
Early stages.
Not the early stages, but at the most blackest of times. Oh, right. Sorry, rest of the time, he virtually covered that up. And that used to make me angry too. Like when we was with Mr. Hero of the day, let's all have a fare at the pub. I'm like, what am I? Chopped liver. Yeah. I'm here. I've been here the whole time. Hey, wait, be everybody back here. You know, so...
I have so much admiration for people that can change their perspective on things later in life. It's similar with Grandma. So Grandma was a practicing Catholic her whole life and was at church. I remember always at church every Sunday.
Yeah.
And my uncle very tragically passed away in a workplace accident a few years ago. And Grandma decided at that point in her life to question her belief system and that sort of stuff and go, hang on a second, am I looking at this the right way? And that sort of thing. I have so much respect for people that do that. Similar to Dad, who was able to sort of look at how life works and realize that he's not an awful person for having the son that
the fear of the unknown. He just was terrified because all he knew was that it was a bad thing. But they never defined what bad was. And he had to experience it, that it wasn't bad.
A lot of admiration for him. But I don't want to take away from how wonderful you've been my whole life since
Well, exactly right. But I have just confessed that in actual fact, I grew up a little bit, only a little bit, you'll see, to realise that I had it really easy. And as far as grandma goes, of course she was always going to be accepting because she is a diva at heart.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, you know.
She's a drag queen, basically. And grandma was in a girl band when she was young. That's how
she met
my grandfather. Yeah. He was in the army.
A dashing army in the military, and she was the pianist in a three-piece dance band.
Fun. Camp. So here's one that I really wanted to ask you because I've never really talked to you about it, but obviously a very close-knit family. But Robbie and Declan, my brothers, have very different lives to me. One's just gotten engaged, which is very exciting, only a couple of weeks ago. Is that public knowledge?
Yes.
Oh, it's okay. Oh, okay. And the other one has a house and two kids, adorable kids, your first grandchildren.
He's not married, Tom.
He's not married.
It sounds successful, but, you know,
as if
they're
you
bastards.
Ever cared. But do you ever worry about me being the oldest and not having those things?
Absolutely not. And I never, ever have, because I don't know why people worry about I do know why people worry about that, because there's that old Australian dream, you've got to have your piece of land and then you're safe. But that would mean also that then I would compare my success to my neighbour, or not my neighbour, but my friends at work who live in, you know, Kew with a really flash house. I don't see that. I don't measure success at all by that. And the reason they have their houses or get engaged is because that's what they've invested in that makes them really happy. So I'm really proud that they've done that, because that's what they want to do. But at the same time, I see you have invested an incredible amount of your working time and your effort and who you are and finances into this really successful life that you have. So, and you know what? The other bastards haven't got me on a podcast.
That's true.
This could be my platform. So really, they're losers.
Yeah.
And you know, parents do not have favourites. So, Effie, back me up.
No, don't have favourites.
That's a lie. No.
Declan,
No, that's a full lie. Mum will never say it, but I know for a fact that I am her favourite. I absolutely know it in my bones.
Make him feel better about himself.
No, she'll never say it.
And you know,
but I know
it's just to make
true.
The other kids.
Yeah. But I say it to everyone else, too.
So, I mean, we've been quite open about mental health and that sort of stuff, especially, I think, in the last several years.
Yeah.
But one thing that I've realised in the last few years is I've struggled sometimes when I get to hang out with the whole family at Christmas or birthdays or whatever. I'll come down and see Archie and you know, the grandkids and that sort of stuff. Even though you guys are so fucking lovely and so welcoming of having me there, sometimes I go home and then I get into this sort of darker period. And it's a weird thing because I know you don't expect it of me, and I don't even expect it of me. I don't want to have kids or whatever.
Isn't it weird? Yeah.
It's a weird thing where I sort of feel a little bit sad that I'm missing out. I don't know what it's like to have that stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how to explain it. Not by you, but expected by society to do this thing. And I don't really have a path that I'm supposed to follow.
I suppose it's not established enough that, you know, I mean, because your village is only allowed to get married now, so you don't know
what
that looks like.
I mean, and there is also a beautiful silver lining to that, is we're laying down the laws of, I mean, Mikey's about to get, well, not about to get married, but you're going to get married soon, and you guys get to decide what marriage looks like you. So there's a silver lining to that as well. But yeah, I don't know.
Isn't that interesting whether it's, you know, laid down in our genetic material that success at the end of your life is that you have an accumulation of wealth and you have passed on genetic material in the form of human beings. So, because certainly that's not where our family ideals are, I believe.
No, I don't think so either, no.
And the thing about mental health is the older I get, I realise that you just have to live long enough before you have an anxiety episode that needs medicating.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, talking about mental health, one of the things that I've been very open with you about, and I've been working through a lot lately, is what I went through at high school, which was an incredibly hard time for me.
Yeah, so from this retrospective viewpoint that I have now, it makes me really sad to know how bad it really was, because I didn't think it was that bad. But I do remember, so when you were transitioning from primary school to high school, because it's the things that mothers talk about, what school is your kid going to go to? I've met the principal.
Yeah.
And you had a massive, and you boys promised me if I say something inappropriate, you're going to cut it. But you had a huge group of fag hags, as we call them, eh?
Yeah,
right. Which, as I explained, Robbie was jealous of, because all those girls wanted to be near you all the time. And the feeder school was an all-boys Catholic school. And I was really worried about you going to that. Oh, I can't remember her name, your best little bestie from high school. She was like...
From primary school?
Yeah.
Tasha Mata.
Yeah.
Passed away.
She was like, love how... Yeah, really sad. It was. Really sad. Yeah. It really... She used to say, how to her mum. Her mum was lovely. How's Tom going to be when I'm not there? Like,
yeah.
And I was like, I get it. I know. It was really hard because he wanted a lot of choices. And I don't think you can blame schools anyway, totally.
Mm.
For you, who's not a boy who's gay yet, it's just a boy growing up.
Yeah. Great sex.
To go to a different school, you'd have been the only kid that wasn't going to the other school. And you were like, no, I want to go to St. Bede's. That's where everyone's going. I want to look normal.
Yes, that's so exactly what it was. Yeah.
And so I was like, hesitantly, you went there. Mm. First 2 years were obvious to me that you were a shitful.
Mm.
I got a phone call when you first school camp that you'd run away from camp and no wonder. And I was like, right, I'm dealing with this.
Yeah.
Rang the mother up.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to talk to me and Tom.
Mm.
Sent you off to a counsellor, which you hated, but I think it was a good thing still. But it was really hard because, again, you could only do what you were comfortable doing.
Mm.
What I thought you should do is a different thing.
Mm.
And there were things that I like, do you want me to talk to someone? Because I wanted to go down and rip.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But that, how good would that have made, you know, stand out again?
Yeah.
Really difficult to manage.
Yeah.
But again, I did not realise quite how bad it was. Because
and I think a lot of that was me not letting you know because I didn't want to disappoint or make you feel sad about it. And home was a very different place to school and home was safe. And by talking about what was going on at school meant that that was bleeding into the home
bleed into
life.
It, right. Yeah, that makes sense too. But we could have worked through that together. We could have figured it out together.
Yeah, and
which we probably could have as a grown up, you realise. Yeah. But that's the nature of
kids. And, you know, pretending to be sick and that sort of stuff. Because it was just such a bad
the amount of times that I did that. I was like, oh, I'm sick. I can't go to school, Mum. It's not happening.
And then I remember
For sure.
Year 9.
Yeah.
By then you started, you met your first gay friend at school that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
And you had a really good friendship group. And that was the girls and the boys that you still have friends today. And I thought at that stage, great.
Mm.
Got to see.
Yeah, I think that's what it sort of started picking up a little bit. But that's also when some of the worst prejudice started coming out of from people that didn't really give a fuck. Because as other kids were hitting their puberty, I think some of them started really hating.
And see, that masked for me that what you were going through because I was like, oh, he's got this group, friendship group now.
Yeah.
And they were strong. Bridie, I mean, they were really strong, strong friends.
Were,
and Helen and Dave and, you know, all of that group, they were really loyal, strong friends. And so I thought, oh, that's okay. Everything's all right. I didn't know that there was that other thing going on.
Mm.
Yeah.
So we've talked about me a lot, which is one of my favourite topics. But just a few questions about you and your life. Did you have gay friends growing up?
Do you know, I was a really, really late bloomer. Like, boys, I'm hetero, just by the way. Yeah. I think. Well, I don't know. Anyway, but I guess for want of better terminology, I really didn't have any urges till I was about 17. So it didn't occur to me that that was a really important thing in people's lives. So I didn't notice. I have got. There's a thing called gaydar, apparently.
Oh yeah.
I have got the worst gaydar in entire world.
But also, which is probably why my friends had the intervention. Going through nursing, did you have lesbian friends?
So definitely in high school, I didn't know. In nursing, it wasn't obvious to me as well. Again, it wasn't important to me, so maybe that's why I didn't notice it.
Yeah.
And also, it still was in that generation where they wouldn't have been really that out there.
Yeah, right.
Now, some of my very, very best friends, same-sex couples, I know a lot of people.
Yeah.
And the proportion, there's a large proportion of the population that are gay. That are, hang on, what's that whole thing? That are LGBTQIA+.
Yes. Well, if they're all of those, then they're going to be a very unique person.
But I'm just oblivious to it. Yeah. We're putting the G.
We're the G.
But you're not doing the G.
No, we're not doing G.
We are the G.
We're not doing G, no. Yeah. what about, and I'm going, we'll talk about in a sec about aged care, but Noel, the chef, we, for several years while I was growing up in primary school, mum and dad owned and ran a nursing home, and the chef, I found out since I've been an adult, Noel was gay. Am I allowed to, is this okay to talk about, mum?
Hey, I suppose it is. Great. He'll ring up and sue us. Because funnily enough, he's still gay.
Yeah.
Still a chef?
Yeah.
Still happens.
Chef, we've only briefly talked about it since I've been an adult. Mm. Of course, as a kid, I didn't know he was gay. I just thought it was fabulous. I loved hanging out in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And I'd help him make scones and cook eggs and all that sort of stuff. I remember you being very close with Noel. Like, did he ever have much of an influence on your life and your understanding?
So I adored
men?
Noel, and I actually worked with him before that.
He,
different working environment. He worked at the hospital that I used to work at, and then he came and worked for us. And I just loved him. Same thing, just gorgeous. Do you know? I really didn't get it that he was gay. He was so camp.
He looked like Freddie Mercury. He had those tight.
Oh my god!
How did you not know he was gay?
Car did you drive? Just beautiful car and everything. And he
had like a, he would always be in like a white just fitted t-shirt and a handlebar mustache.
Did he have his?
early 90s. Rolled up.
Yeah, I love yeah, the that's, first that's three the buttons side. Are undone. Yeah, exactly. And the hair's yeah, yeah, hanging yeah. out.
Oh, yeah. Oh gosh, you do have a bad gator.
I know, right? So that's what I mean. I'm oblivious to yeah. it. And love that's that. Not what was important to me. And his vernacular was, I've got to go out tonight. I don't know what frock to wear. And I just thought, you're funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like me. I'm oblivious. Yeah. Too busy looking after kids, mate. You know, thinking about, you know, what's for
dinner and all that kind of crap. Yeah, and he used to talk about his friend, and I guess it was, although he was out there and it was quite obvious, and everyone except stupid people like me and you probably still didn't have boyfriends except
to talk about it, in the workplace.
Gay bars or whatever. Yeah.
So. You are a nurse. You're still a nurse. You've been a nurse your entire adult life.
39 years.
Wow.
I was a prodigy. I started when I was 5. No, that's not true.
That's how old you are. Right?
listeners out there.
You dedicated a lot of your life to caring for others. You did some of your early placements as a student working with some of the patients that had their first legal gender affirmation surgery in Australia.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah,
First of all, it probably wasn't called gender affirmation surgery.
No, it was called, I can tell what the name of the surgeries were, but yeah, I guess I thought it was transitional or something like that. But vaginoplasties. And breast augmentation.
And these are the first legal ones. So people had.
So this was 1982, and it was at the Queen Victoria Hospital. And it was really interesting because I was hospital based trained, and I trained at the Royal Melbourne, but they were doing the surgery. So I looked after, I can think of the top of my head, 5 gender reassignment, do you call it? Yeah. I don't know now. So I remember one in particular, a very young 19 year old. Absolutely stunning. I could only, and remember, I'm Catholic. I'm still a virgin. And not a lot of exposure to sexuality. to sexuality at all, let alone homosexuality and transgender and all that kind of thing. So that was really quite good being naive because I didn't have an opinion. I didn't have a formulated opinion.
That's right.
I was getting first-hand exposure to it. So this girl was 19, about 6'4", the most thick, beautiful, shoulder-length auburn hair, massive Adam's apple and huge feet, but I could only identify with her as a female. And anyway, she had her surgery, and God bless her cotton socks, had everything ready, had a little post-op nighty ready that had a little paint mark right about where the Johnny was. And the next day when she could finally get changed, I showered, put this on. She's like, oh my God, didn't think that through, did I? Look, it looks like I've got my period. And I was like, oh, darling, you know, you've gone through so much worse than period pain.
Yeah.
Anyway, she was in absolute agony, and I was like, really stuck, at a loss, like, I'll get you something for the pain. This, you know, you're just amazing. And she was like, no, this is what I really want. And for me to see that, someone who needed something so badly that welcomed so much pain with open arms to get it, I was like, oh, wow, that's just amazing.
I guess it makes you really realize it's not, you know, there's people saying, oh, they're just unwell on the head. That's more, it sort of confirms.
Yeah, they just want to put themselves out there. They just want to make it all about them. Oh, my God, no one would do that. Just
unless they're 100% certain that they knew
attention,
what they,
and if they did, then they really need to see a psychiatrist. And then on the other, there was a woman well into her 60s who, you know, that sort of crazy Phyllis Diller type.
Oh, yes, yeah, yes. Phyllis Diller. Oh, my God.
You're with the
with the references.
Yeah, the gay references. Well done.
Is that a gay reference?
Yeah.
I guess. In my day, it was just a reference.
Yeah.
But anyhow, lipstick up to the eyebrow, you know, high and zany high and all over the place. And she came in and was only having a breast augmentation and had lived her entire life.
So transgender.
This is 1982. Had lived as a female always.
Yeah.
And this was her first surgical intervention. And was just so happy and loving it. And it was just like,
and was 60, what?
Oh, in her 60s.
In her 60s, in 1982.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. And had lived her whole life as a woman. Fuck.
I think some people had friendly GPs who realised
what was going on.
What was going on, and that they'd be lucky to survive and not because of the war. So it gave them exclusions.
Was it called a murmur or something like that? A chest murmur that they would get away.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. What a wonderful experience to
really, I've been really blessed with life experiences like that, and that's one. Yeah, I think I'm fondly quite often. I have seen, and I've got 2 people that I've seen it with. They were both gender reassigned.
Transgender, yeah.
Thank you, transgender. Yeah, I just thought, you're wrong.
I know. You've lived through different phrases.
That's it.
So they're both women. One, I was on an emergency call, and the reason the person had deteriorated was because of her prostate, which was still there and was enlarged. And so it was we didn't get it at first. We couldn't figure out why she was this sick.
Right, yeah.
And it didn't matter that genetically she was originally in a male.
Mm.
And so it was a change of thinking for, you know, because we have a decision tree
and
it kind of tripped us up a little bit.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, so we're starting to see that sort of thing coming into the medical field. How it is in nursing homes and everything, I don't know yet, but be interesting to see.
All I know is that they've opened up an LGBTI nursing home in Dalesford, and I am already saving to go there. Oh, I am so excited to go there.
Mum will want to go there.
Yeah, actually true. Yeah, I'll see Grandma.
All the fag hags will want to be there.
Absolutely. I'll still be doing Granny Bingo there. I won't have to spend so much time on the makeup anymore.
And you'll probably just call it bingo.
Yeah, it'll be bingo. Well, Mum, thank you for being the first mum to get grilled on the show.
Thank you.
We'll be back in a second with Effie's chat.
Effie, I can't wait. It's not that bad.
Oh, I'm so nervous. You're absolutely like great. So informative, you know.
Love it.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
And we're back from our little break. So we're going to have a little chat with my mum now and see how much she remembers from my life. No.
Let's interrogate Effie.
Let's do it. So Mum, Effie, you are a Māori woman from the Tūhoe tribe back in NZ, but you moved to Australia when you were about 16. Through your life, you have been a stay-at-home mum for the last sort of 33 years, and you've raised 8 children and obviously many, many grandchildren at this point as well. And very clearly, our family is very important to you. I just want to know from your perspective, like, what was it like raising such a big family and tackling everyone's different personalities
all at the same time? Yeah, that was a challenge, you know, all the different personalities, but I didn't have them all at once.
No.
That's a good point.
I just thought I'd put that out there, right?
Good, because my eyes were watering.
But, you guys are 2 years apart.
Yeah,
couple
roughly.
Couple years a year apart. But I like that because you all kept each other company.
Mm-hmm.
One grew up older than the other, of course, and gave the younger one advice and helped the younger ones with homework. Mm-hmm. Mikey?
Yeah.
Very smart he was. It was rewarding, you know, and it was, like I said, a challenge in itself, but seeing them mature individually as adults today, I'm very happy how it turned out.
That's good. Are you from a big family as well, I think?
Yes.
Yeah. And you always knew you'd have a big family?
Not really.
Mm-hmm. No.
I didn't think I would.
Just so, you had Mike and you thought, well, I can't stop. You know, they're so good. You know?
Can I repeat that again? Yeah. Wow, yeah, I've got the recipe right.
Well, you know, it's like getting your first tattoo.
Yeah.
So they say.
Yeah.
You don't stop at one.
Yeah.
Yes. You get addicted to it, apparently.
Well, I do have a cute little tidbit. So Mum does only have one tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
Is it it's the left side of your chest or the right side?
Right.
Right side. Yeah.
It's a rose.
Yeah.
With a love heart in the middle of it, spider web surrounding the love heart.
Yeah.
I was 24.
Yeah.
And I had you.
Yeah.
Oh.
So Mum got that tattoo when she had me.
And that's the only tattoo she's got.
Yeah.
And she's got 8 kids.
Yeah.
Oh, you really are the favourite.
I know. That's what I said. I told you.
You would, May would love Mikey.
Yeah. No, it's good.
You know, Dad reminded me about, you know, the challenges was really birthdays and Christmases and things like that. You know, all the expenses, school uniforms, shoes.
Oh, my God. That's it.
I'm having friggin' knit stuff.
What's the age difference?
They were coming home from school with knits every week.
Yeah.
It was so friggin' annoying.
Like, I can remember growing up, there was a lot of times where, obviously because there were so many of us, that we couldn't do all of the school activities and stuff. But Mum always made it a point for me to be able to go to school camp.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was the one thing that I was like, this is the thing that I want to do every year. Mm-hmm. And, like, always, always made it work.
Oh,
which
bless.
I absolutely wow, love
yeah.
so much.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. We try to cater for every
She just
child.
Tried to send you away as often
yeah.
as possible.
No, it's all about the experience, mate. You know? Yeah, yeah. yeah. And being away from home because we couldn't afford to go on holidays
yeah.
or trips or anything like that. But I have really good friends and would take a couple of kids off my hands.
Yeah, yeah.
I want this kid. Well, not take them, but, you know,
yeah, yeah,
steal
yeah.
them. Steal their favourite.
Yeah. That was I feel like there was a lot of times, like, growing up when we did go to social events and stuff where a lot of the parents would comment and say, like, oh, your children are so well behaved and, like, they listen to you and, like...
A little community.
Yeah.
You know? We all help each other out, and this is how I want to bring my kids up, you yeah. know, helping each other. And they will learn to help, you know, when they move out, learn to help other people.
So I wanted to touch a little bit on, like, my coming out story, because I have a different version to what your version is. And we spoke about it the other night on the phone, actually. I knew you were a little bit anxious about coming on the show, so I just wanted to check in with you. What is your version of how my coming out was?
Dad wanted me to say.
Well, yeah.
Duh, about time.
Yeah, pretty much.
I said, do I really have to
I
say
love
that?
It.
He's like, yeah, say that.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, because
I love that.
We wanted you to come out on your own, as you did, but we always knew it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was not only us. It was our friends and
yeah.
family and even some of your siblings. Even though
yeah, who weren't so about nice it. About it.
Even though they were nasty about it. And I had to call them up and get weak.
Graham, asshole. So, like, at what sort of age did you sort of realise?
So that was 2 years old.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did dressing he have a yellow halter with the...
Oh, no, we had a dress-up
yeah.
kind of thing, you know? He was rocking the handbag and the high heels with his hoodie, tracksuit, you know, matching.
Oh, my God, no. Really well.
We have a photo of this. No, yeah. I remember when I was in kindergarten. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And to play with his sister's Barbies, and she used to really get pissed off with him. Don't touch my Barbies, Mikey. Man, like, he's touching my Barbies.
Yeah.
He loved brushing hair. Loved watching me put on makeup. You know, just over the years, little bits and pieces came out. Never had a girlfriend. But then Dad reminded me of, I think he did.
Yeah.
Once.
Yeah. There was one.
And he was like about 12.
Yeah.
It wasn't for long. But he did have a girlfriend.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tom had a girlfriend and it was quite obvious and it was in high school.
Yeah.
This was about year 9.
I think so, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I'd already
and it was suddenly on.
Men,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
This girl was brought home and Tony was just showering her with attention and Tom and is like, you know, have you had enough to eat? Why didn't you come around for tea? Have you had enough to eat? And everything.
But the
I was
interesting
like,
I'll put this out there though, that I tried to have sex with her. She didn't want to have sex. It wasn't me trying
to do it. I'm like,
how old were you?
Yeah, I was, I think, 15 at that point.
Naughty boy.
Yeah, I think I was just trying to make sure that I
was doing it.
Oh, you were doing it for yourself.
Oh, that you were
going. Well, I liked
well,
it.
Well, as it turned out, you wrote it Bridie, and that turned out, and well, that all gave us. Yeah. Mary only found that. Well, oh my God, that was a revelation to us all. Anyway,
you say the R word.
Rude.
Is that an old rose? She says worse than that.
Yeah, when I'm not on a very famous podcast, I say fuck. But and anyway, so they came around, and we were this very normal family for 5 minutes, and Meg was leaving and you were seeing her out like a gentleman, tucking her in and giving her a kiss and whatnot. And Tony's standing there and he's got his arms crossed and his chest out and he's proud as anything, his smile from ear to ear. And I looked at him and I said, you're really happy? And he said, yeah. I said, you think this means that Tom's not gay? And he just kept looking, face didn't change. He said, don't burst my bubble right now. So he always knew. We just had to go through the process.
That's it. I guess because, like, that was in a period where we had the grandchildren come and stay with us for a while. Yeah. So at one point in time, we had my older sister's kids come and live with us because she was unable to look after them. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of the time that I was coming out and being a reckless teenager. And I got away with a lot of shit.
He did. He was a naughty boy.
Well, he's got that angelic face. Yeah, of course he did.
No, never.
Of course you don't.
Look at that.
Right? At his fool.
There's one thing that we've sort of touched on briefly a long time ago that I wanted to talk about. One of your brothers, so my uncle, wasn't sort of confirmed by the family. It was sort of suspected that he was gay. Very sadly, sort of took his own life, obviously, when you were a lot younger.
Mm.
Obviously, because the family didn't know 100% where he was at with his own sexuality. He'd never had a girlfriend or anything. He never came out, but it was never sort of spoken about.
Yeah.
Like, how do you think that sort of shaped the family's idea on sexuality at that point in time?
I was like 8, I think.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, you were super young. Yeah.
He was like 28 when he committed suicide.
Because he was a high school teacher,
He was a teacher, you know, boys' school.
Mm-hmm.
He was accused of sexual misconduct.
Okay.
Yeah. It was hard for my brother to tell me tonight. Actually, I just spoke to him tonight.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And he was really close, so. But he thinks, well, you know, he could have been still in the closet, sister, you know, and taken it to the grave.
Yeah.
Back then, you know, it was nothing about, there was no white law involving the situation. It was all, because it was all family and close-knit and everybody was family. He taught music and songs. He wrote a lot of songs and he got along with the parents as well.
Yeah.
You know, so he was a great teacher and everybody loved him.
Mm.
Everything was good. There was nothing untowards. There was nothing bad about him, said about him, you know, except for that. Yeah. I think he's just got a bit too much for him.
Mm. Yeah.
That's heartbreaking.
Because he denied everything, you know, and he was beat up for it and all that kind of stuff back in, you know. He was called gay.
Yeah.
You know, you're a gay molester. Yeah. But he hadn't even come out, you know, because he was 28 and he didn't have a girlfriend, but he had a lot of girlfriends, as my brothers were saying. You know, he had a lot of girlfriends.
Yeah.
Mm. Everybody wanted to be with him.
So you say he was accused of sexual misconduct. Do you think he was guilty of that, or do you think that that was people saying, oh, because you're gay, you probably do that sort of stuff?
Yeah, you know, I thought that, but everyone in my family had a different story. So.
Yeah, right.
And he had a beautiful aura about him, and he was a very sensitive soul. And it's the same way I feel about Mikey.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sort of ties into, like, my next question is that I remember when I was really young that you had mentioned Uncle Brimsey and said that I reminded you of him.
Mm.
Knowing his story, like, was there sort of any fears that you thought that I would suffer any sort of similar mental demons that he obviously went through? And, like, were there any fears that you thought
that... Yeah, the stigma at the time was, you know, it was rife. Yeah, I did worry about you. Did you have to put up with, you know, at school, peers? Yeah, when I wasn't around... I wasn't there to protect you.
For sure.
That kind of stuff. Normal parent, you know, stuff, you know. Like with your age, you're at work.
Mm. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And you're not there to.
And it's the same with your kids everywhere. And I think, I mean, you asked before about that I was totally happy when Tom came out, but there was concern for his future. And funnily enough, it wasn't about your mental health. Like, I didn't know anyone who had, that it was such a demon that you would want to finish your life because it's just not worth living with. My concerns were more, and it had happened, and man, if I ever find these people, about being bashed. You know, gay bashing was a thing at the time. And, I mean, you've been followed and you've had a couple of incidents where it makes my blood boil.
Like you say,
you can't be there. But, yeah, that is horrible to think that a lot of men have had such demons just because there's that label that, oh, they called you gay. Because that used to be a derogatory term. It's not what it is now that everybody wants to be gay.
It's interesting that kids don't use that. Apparently kids don't use that as a derogatory term anymore. Because at the time it was the worst thing I could be called.
Yeah.
And then I realised I was it.
And I was always amazed at school that kids in prep were saying, you're gay.
You're gay.
I was like, well, first you don't know what it is. And how did you pick Tom out? He looks the same as all the other kids to me. Yeah. But as you know, my gaydar was shit.
Yeah.
And like with you, Rose, I was really happy that Mikey had a lot of friends to fall back on when I wasn't there for him. I made them welcome in my house and let me know how Mikey was going.
Yeah.
Mm. You know?
Oh, that's beautiful.
Was Mikey a favourite with your friends, your women friends, as well, like the other mothers?
Oh, everybody.
Yeah.
I always feel everybody. Like Tom was a favourite of the other mums too. And so, you know.
My male and female.
I feel like especially like for a lot of my like friends in high school and like a lot of my gay friends, because mum was so accepting, that our house was sort of a safe haven because there were so many kids around because my whole family accepted me for who I was from day dot. Whereas a lot of my friends' families didn't.
And that was pretty sad.
And so there was a lot of times where like my friends would come and stay with us for weeks on end and it was never an issue.
Yeah, I wouldn't let them stay over at their house.
No.
You know, their parents weren't accepting and I said, well, you know, you wanted to keep away from there.
I loved it. It was great. My friends loved it and they still talk about it to this day. How much they love my mum. It's amazing.
That must be why we bond. I think we're both from the same area. Yeah. We both grew up in the same area, but also mum's was always had the door open for friends.
Yeah.
And primary school, I was like bullied for being gay. And my only two friends were the only Asian student in the entire, because it was a very white, very straight, very sporty kind of area. The two friends I had were the only disabled kid in the area and the only Asian kid in the area.
Yeah.
And we just were sort of like the little trio of random kids hanging out.
Yeah,
and then as I got older, you know, sort of became friends with a lot of other people that, you know.
And quite interestingly, you've probably got the most well-rounded high-profile roles.
The three of us, actually, because Bridie's now doing, she's a Paralympian and a public Tasha speaker and sadly passed away, but and then I've been lucky enough to do this sort of stuff, But yeah, same thing, and maybe that's why we sort of get each other, is we come from those very open, accepting families.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, his brother, you know, is a big...
My older brother.
Footy player, Mr. Manny Man, Mr. Blokey Blokey.
Yeah,
so do you guys get on?
We do now.
You do now, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know what? There was one defining moment that we always laugh about.
Yeah.
I was probably about 14 or 15, and I'd just come out, and my older brother Graham had come back to live with us because he was back and forth between our place and his dad's place. I can't remember what he was saying to me, but he was just in my face. And I just remember screaming at him, fuck off.
Yeah.
And I pushed him. I pushed him from the dining room and he flew about 5 meters across the room and into the couch in the computer room and like slammed up against the wall and everybody stood up.
We were sitting in the lounge room, right? The TV's over there. Right, and so we could just see it on the left hand side.
This human bullet.
Something came flying through, whacked into the computer chair.
Yeah.
We all turned left and went, what the?
Yeah.
Stood up and.
And that kind of
and Graham's lying there going,
respect.
That little, gonna get it. And I just shot off. I just went, nope.
I think that was another interesting time that I found, you know, what you're saying with Tony and I when we were at different, you know, how do we live through that? The same with you two. So Robbie and Tom, they're only 22 months apart and Tom's the oldest one. They were best mates before they went to school. Absolute best mates. Robbie went to school, discovered his entire family were dags. And so he found out we were all dags. And on top of that, where you had the whole, you had to live with being called gay and everything else, by association, he had to well.
Yeah.
And he wasn't.
Yeah.
And he knew firmly that he wasn't.
Yeah.
So he distanced himself by being an asshole.
Yeah. Same thing with my brother.
And that was really frustrating. But again, as adults, there's total respect.
It was funny because after that moment I had with my older brother, Graham, all of a sudden, he had this like massive respect.
Yeah,
evidence.
My Mikey's girlfriends used to stick up for him a lot, you know, his sisters, you know.
Yeah,
he was well looked after, even though mummy wasn't there most of the time.
Yeah, but that's all right.
Always busy and
had other stuff.
Especially
going
during your teen years, eh?
Yeah, but like
when you really needed me,
that was fine though. Like I just sort of needed to just figure it out on my own.
But the other thing is, obviously, you didn't feel abandoned because you both still have this beautiful, very close relationship.
Yeah.
It obviously was the perfect balance.
Yeah.
Thank you. Very sweet of you.
I wanted to talk to you, Mum, about Auntie Jenny, because obviously she is the only other outwardly queer person before I had come out. So she originally was married, had three kids, and then later on in life came out as a lesbian.
Yep.
She'd come over from New Zealand when I was like 13 or something. And that was when I was sort of just discovering that I was like a little gay kid. And like, it was so good to have someone in my family so visible in my life being like, I'm out and proud and I'm doing my own thing. Before she had like come to see us, like, did you speak to her at all about like coming out and stuff beforehand?
No.
No? Like, was it like a bit of a surprise when she came out?
I heard it on the grapevine.
Okay.
You know, through the family.
Yeah, yeah.
And stuff. But then when I saw her face to face, she actually did pull me aside and ask me what I thought about sharing her beloved. So it was just the two of us out on the street, drunk as skunks. Of course, you got to get me drunk first.
Yeah.
I pretty much said to her, you know, it's about time you were happy.
Exactly
in your life. This is the first time I've ever saw you happy.
Wow. Truly happy, yeah.
Truly happy, besides having your children.
Yeah.
She kind of thanked me for that in a sootily way.
That's nice.
Got me another beer.
Yeah. So that clearly you could have sort of had an inkling.
Oh, no, I was totally surprised.
Oh, you were surprised about it.
You know, when I first heard about it.
Yeah, yeah.
because I wasn't surprised in front of her, I had already known. She just wanted to know how I felt about it,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, unfortunately, not everybody will feel the same way,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
in our family. Mm-hmm. But it's all different circumstances. Because you know,
there are certain parts of our family that are heavily religious.
Yes, because
we
of
don't
religion.
Really get yeah. along with them at all because they force it upon us. And there are other factions of our family that are very accepting. And like something else that I've wondered, how do you think that the rest of the family have, like, what their sort of opinion is of me being so openly gay as well? Like,
oh, they're proud of you, Mikey.
Yeah, like obviously very visibly online, I am very out and proud.
Yeah, out and proud, and it's not only because you're my son.
Yeah,
it's because of you. Really. Your aura is great. You've got a great personality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're very friendly.
I got it from you.
You know? No, you didn't. Did you?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's not about me.
I have a question about...
But anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry,
question time.
About religion. We've talked a lot about religion on our podcast and the influence, especially for Luke, Mikey, and myself, from coming from three families that had religious roots. Do you practice religion, Effie?
No, I don't. Mm-hmm. When I became an adult, I decided, you know, not to go anywhere. I still believe in a higher power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I still believe that, you know, we didn't come here on our own.
Yeah. But there's something going on, but it's not necessarily
but we are all the same,
church kind of thing. Yeah.
Whether it was God, Buddha, whatever.
And Mum,
take whatever you want.
We went to church a lot when we were kids. I kind of am, I'm guessing, we've never really talked about it, that was... For more for my grandparents' benefit than your benefit.
It was a bit of my growing up too. I hadn't really figured out. Not
do you
to
now?
Go.
Do you now identify as Christian or?
Yes, I think so. So growing up again, I was really lucky. I grew up in Catholic, strongly Catholic. Go to mass every Sunday. Mm-hmm. Having the fight with my mother about I can wear sandals because Jesus wore sandals.
That's awesome.
I could wear a dress because Jesus wore a dress.
Yes. Oh yes. See, now that's the thing. If I wanted to still go to church, I'd make them change. My not practicing in Catholicism as it is today is not about their attitude to sexuality because I've changed that. There's other reasons that are even more sinister. For me, I was really lucky because my mum came from a very Catholic background, as I told you, and my dad converted. He was the worst Catholic of all. But my mum came from a very contemporary Catholic background too.
Okay,
so she went to her cousin's wedding and it was a full mass in the Church of England, which they should not, as Catholics in those days, should not have gone into that church. And her mother said to them, you'll be going. It's your cousin's wedding. Be damned if the church is going to stop you, make you doing that. And so she had a very open-minded attitude to it. I didn't go to Catholic schools because we always lived rurally. I was an army brat, so we moved a lot. So I didn't have that influence either of that really patriarchal brand of Catholicism. So I actually really liked mass and I loved the songs and I loved knowing when to get up and get down and be doing as well as anybody else. You know, you gay guys, these guys wear dresses.
There's a lot of similarities between the Catholic Church sermons and drag shows.
So my youngest sister, your youngest daughter, Bonnie, came out as bisexual. Not sort of like officially, but sort of just said...
She came out to me, mate.
Well, yeah, she came out to you, which
that was a big deal,
which is amazing as bisexual, which I really, really loved it. When she came to me, she was just like, oh my God, I have a girlfriend. And I was just like, oh, sick, cool. Like, I love this. This is great. And then I remember the next time I'd seen her, it'd been a little while, and she's like, oh my God, I have a boyfriend. And I was just like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, sick. This is awesome. So when she came out, it was during the marriage equality postal vote, obviously as a mum of two queer children. How did you feel about the postal vote when it was all happening?
The people have spoken, mate.
Yeah.
You know, especially mainly against the churches.
I think so, yeah.
You know, these churches just start looking in their own backyards.
Yeah.
It did annoy me a lot.
Yeah.
That they had the majority of the say in anything. We were happy.
Yeah, with the outcome.
That the people of Australia could help.
Pissed me off we had to vote for it.
I know.
Why isn't it just that we've come to our senses and just go, oh, fuck, have we not always done this?
Why didn't we do this from the beginning? That's right.
I agree with what you're saying. Like, it's fucking awful that we had to go through it.
Yeah.
But then
there the were some, and it was a really hard time. And
I think it was just a hard time.
Because we've spoken about it a few times on the podcast and how difficult it was for us to sort of see
us being just, baited.
Yeah, us being baited by all these horrible people. And like, I'm very happy with the outcome, but the journey that we had to go through to get to that outcome was absolute bullshit.
Absolutely. And it felt like there was silver linings in the moments where you would see people who wanted to support you, but
you know, didn't have a say.
There was, you know, there was people that you didn't expect from family and friends coming out and saying, oh, yeah, I support you. Yeah. You know, it was really lovely. Yeah.
And kudos to you guys who survived it, because I felt like the architects of that whole thing were like, this is going to fail and we are sorted forever. We never have to worry about this again. And you're like, I feel like we can all sit there and flip the bed and go, ha-ha.
Yeah, fuck you.
Yeah. So last year, I took you and Bon Bon to your very first Pride March. Which was a lot of fun. It was a really, really hot day.
St.
Kilda Pride.
St. Kilda Pride. Yeah, yeah. What was it like for you and Bonnie just being immersed in all of our
Bonnie
culture
was
for the
in
day?
Awe of everybody. Yeah. You know? She felt, I could see she felt very comfortable.
Yeah.
Besides being really hot.
Yeah.
So many people were there. And just to see the, you know, smile on your face.
Mm.
And on Bonnie's face, it was a kind of different kind of freedom.
Yeah.
You know?
That's why I wanted her to come. Because I was just like, she's finally accepted who she is. I want her to come and experience this. Because I remember the very first time I ever went to any sort of like Pride March or protest or anything. Like, I literally bawled my eyes out with like happiness being around so many queer people. And I really wanted to give that to her. And like, and I'm happy that you were there as well. Because like,
My very first.
It was a part of like my life that I wanted to share with you that you'd never experienced before.
No, and I'm glad you did that.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah.
You know, you got to educate me.
That's it.
Now, instead of me educating you.
So to wrap things up tonight, Mum, I have one last thing to ask you. So what sort of advice would you give to parents who suspect their children are gay? And is there anything that you wish that you did differently throughout my life and dealing with my queerness and being a homo?
Being a homo?
Yeah.
I wouldn't change anything.
Yeah.
I wish I had more time for you.
Yeah.
Probably about the only thing I'd change. But to parents out there, I want you to remember what you brought into this world.
Mm-hmm.
This little miracle that you brought into this world. This little child that you fell in love with, that's most important. And it will help you on the way to help you listen to them and be open.
Mm.
You know, be open to them. I mean, with Mikey it was easy. It was easy because we already had accepted him. For who he was, first. For who he was. Being gay came second.
Exactly.
Being Mikey came first. Falling in love with Mikey came first. If you're one of those parents that have a really hard time, I want you to pull out those baby photos.
Mm.
I want you to think about this baby that you brought up. You know, you brought up. You loved. You saw their first steps. You know what they like to eat.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what makes them laugh.
Mm.
You know, you put their first Band-Aid on them. Think about that. Love is love. And
Are you going to make me cry, Effie? Yeah, it's such a lovely sentiment.
I know. Go, Effie.
No.
What an awesome mum you've got.
Yeah. Don't you wish you had a mum like that?
There you go.
What awesome mums we've got.
Awesome mums.
We're so lucky.
Very lucky.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, mums, for joining us. Thank you, mums. Now, you're going to hang around for our after show.
No,
this is how we make the bank.
No crying in this one.
You've seen me try to get the, what are you going to do?
Well, basically what we do is we do a little mini episode after each episode. So people that have a bit of extra cash that would like to support the podcast get a little reward for giving us $6 a month.
Now that the mum's warmed up.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they get to listen to a little after show after show. So what we're going to do with our after show, we thought it'd be fun to have you guys hang around.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we're going to do a quiz game.
Oh, God.
So we're going to quiz you on gay slang. So we're going to give you some gay slang phrases.
I'm
I feel like you're both coming to this from a level playing field.
Exactly right.
So they're going to give you some gay slang phrases, and you're going to guess, and the mum that guesses the most wins the inaugural Gays Revolting Best Mum trophy that we will find.
To all those paying podcast people out there, can I please reassure you that we have had no warm-up for this?
We did not warn them about this.
This is a surprise.
I'm warming up. Physically, I do not know why. I do not know the answer.
Remember how to log in Google. Google is my friend.
Oh, yeah, this is the problem is mums don't know how to do anything on the internet.
We can send you the link,
Rose. It's all right. So if you guys have trouble with podcasts. If you guys want to tune in to our lovely after show where we play this fun game with our mums, please head on over to our Patreon page and sign up.
And that's at patreon.com/gaysrevoltingpod.
Yes.
Of course, if you want to follow us on our socials, they are...
At Instagram, they are gaysrevoltingpod, or at Twitter and Facebook, it is The Gays Are Revolting. And we also have our private Facebook page that you can join and chat with all about other revolters, as others have called
them. Which is really cute. People like posting in there saying, oh, I'm in Sydney this weekend, where should I go? Or, you know, all sorts of fun, lovely advice people give in there. So jump in there. And, of course, we're about to record a live episode, which will go to air after the one that people are listening to now. And, Mikey, this is your last show in the studio for 6 months, but you are promising you're coming back.
Back in January.
I'm so raring to go with some sad, angry, and jealous of everything that you're about to do for the 6 months. But I love you so much. The last 6 months have been so amazing. I think I've learned so much from you.
I've learned a lot from you.
And I can't wait to watch your trip around the world with your lovely fiancé that I'm bitterly jealous about. we'll see you in the after show, everyone. Now we all have to say bye in a really high-pitched
voice. We have to say like bye all together.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
I'll do 1, 2, 3 with my fingers.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president. You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about it.
Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.